Happy Tuesday, June 6th on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, the extraordinarily popular Ira Kaufman Podcast presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. If you're searching for the perfect certified Cadillac or pre-owned vehicle, then rush to Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. When you buy from Ed Morris, you get more peace of mind knowing every vehicle is inspected, warrantied, reconditioned, and given the Ed Morris seal of approval. Every certified Cadillac comes with a six-year warranty, roadside assistance, and more. Plus, get more savings. Drive a 2013 ATS for $16,985. Hurry in today to Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon to get more. Or click edmorriscadillacbrandon.com to get started. See dealer for all the details and the limited warranty details. And then, of course, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. Just a fantastic dealership where I personally have purchased a few vehicles over the last 5 years or so for family. And the 2017 ATS sedan with courtesy transportation vehicle, $329 per month, zero down with approved credit, 27-month lease, 10K annual miles, total due at signing, zero down, plus tax, tag, title, and dealer fee. All the details are at the dealer, and the offer expires at month's end. Again, always thankful to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. All right, Kaufman, we just heard all about Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon and the fantastic deals. We still love
it. All right, Kaufman, where's the introduction? All right, Ira. All right, Kamish.
That's it.
All right, Irv. He starts right in. Lee, you see that? No introduction. All right, Kaufman. Our listeners don't know who I am. Our readers. I was on Dooming the other day. He got complaints that he didn't say my name enough. People didn't know who the heck was talking.
He didn't.
Can you imagine?
He didn't say your name enough. He should have said at least 10 times, 5 times.
Is anybody not going to know this voice?
Well, number one, that's correct. But Dooming wasn't saying your name enough? Did I get that right? People are complaining?
Somebody tweeted into Dooming that he wasn't saying his guest's name enough.
He should have been explaining that you are the custodian of Canton, Mr. Ira Kaufman of JoeBucksFan.com.
Sage
of Tampa Bay Sports, former Tampa Tribune scribe, former Daily News scribe.
Star of Stop the Presses documentary. You throw that in there. Former UPI.
Did you work with Greg Aiello with the NFL?
I did. I replaced Greg Aiello on the New York Giants beat in 1979.
Did you?
Gentlemen.
That was after you did 30 years covering the Bengals.
Never mind. I was right out of college, and it's got me, covering Norm Van Brocklin over here.
Now, if I remember.
My first year, I covered a rookie quarterback named Phil Sims. That was my first year covering pro football.
You still tight with him?
A little bit. He didn't like some of the stuff I wrote. He still remembers it.
Did he like the stuff you wrote about his son?
Yes. By the way, I saw Sims today.
Which one?
Chris Sims. This morning.
He was on Florio's show
this morning. He was on Florio. He was making some outrageous statements. I don't even remember what he was saying. But he made no sense.
When you said you saw him, my first thought was you saw him at Publix when you were checking out bananas.
He made no sense, Lee. I didn't agree with one thing Sim said in about a 10-minute period. I was like, his bits with me. He doesn't agree with anything I say. So I was like that with Chris Sims.
I agree with plenty you say, Ira. I'm Steve Isbitz, Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com. Speaking of proper introductions, Ira.
There we go.
And, of course, you are Ira. Ira Kaufman, the master of raisin, all that stuff. All right. First off, let's get to business, which is you can also listen on iTunes, on podbean.com. You can subscribe where you get an alert when the podcast shows up there. Now, first, it's posted on JoeBucksFan.com Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then whenever iTunes automatically puts it up, it puts it up. Sometimes it's there in 20 minutes. Sometimes it's there in 5 hours. We don't know. But the point is you can always find it on Joe Bucks Fan, but you can get a nice subscription alert absolutely free on those sites. Leave a comment. The comments are starting to roll in, Ira. Some real classic ones coming in saying that you should be schooling the Joes, which is us.
Another one says we should go an hour and a half.
Well, there's lots of new ones coming in. Maybe I'll read one or two later. But leave a comment. We appreciate the constructive criticism, the praise of the almighty Irv. Ira, everybody, of course, calls you Irv on these comments.
Lee, I think it's worth noting that our numbers are going up on this podcast. They're going up steadily.
And why wouldn't they with you being highlighted?
Well, you got you two characters on.
We're dragging
on
you down.
Yeah.
We might be dragging you down.
And there will be a joint podcast, myself and Justin slash,
The commish?
Justin slash Jason.
Okay.
Next month.
It will happen.
It's going to happen next month.
We'll arrange it.
But we appreciate all the support of the podcast. And definitely leave those comments. We want to hear them, and it's fun. You leave a comment. You write whatever you want. You know, good, bad, indifferent, whatever.
And Javier, if you're listening, do your comment in English. We don't translate.
No, we could use a good Spanish comment. Yeah. Absolutely.
We're multicultural here.
Ira, of course, you know, this is Tuesday's podcast. Looking at last Tuesday's podcast, because I know you love the people. You're a man of the people. You love to know where the people are coming from. And so I just took another look. 44 countries, last Tuesday's podcast, 44 countries. You are slipping in Costa Rica and Andorra and Greece, only down to one.
Greece!
Only down to one.
My cousin in Greece, he's hanging in there. He's hanging in there, Lee.
Oompa.
My man in Rhodes is hanging in there.
What about Sri Lanka?
Is that Ira Kafmanikos?
What else we got, Steve?
But you're up to two in France.
Pierre, my friend.
You're moving steadily. We got six in Japan. Probably U.S. servicemen out there, so we say hello to them if that's who it is. You were at 10 in Mexico. Remember when Pulaski had zero in
Mexico?
He's
at 10 all the time.
You are down to 8 in Mexico, last podcast, so you're slipping there, but you're still...
Acapulco dropped off the map over there.
Well,
really.
The two from France, they must be on the French Riviera while they're hanging on their yacht.
But I'll say this, I'll wrap it up with you're moving up in Dominican Republic, that's 9.
You know
listeners
what? My
last
favorite,
time.
Now I like to give little insights in this podcast to people. You know, I talked about the raisin story, mm-hmm. and you know, just a little insights about where I'm coming from. Now, Steve mentions the Dominican Republic. It so happens.
Uh-oh.
Now, look, all three of us are big
What was her name,
fans.
Ira?
It so happens, growing up, my sports idol. I had a sports idol.
Roberto Clemente.
And no, it wasn't Christy Brinkley's centerfold. Juan
Touché.
Marichal.
Oh, Juan Marichal, yeah.
Was my idol.
Dominican.
Pitcher for the Giants, started in 1960 when I was only about 6 years
high
old.
High leg kick.
High leg kick, stylish right-hander, ended up in the Hall of Fame. Anyway, born and raised in a little town near Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. Now, and we all know the impact Dominican Republic's had on Major League Baseball.
Maybe that's
some of my listeners right there, Steve. Maybe out there in some of those baseball camps. I think every Major League team has a camp, an academy,
as they should,
out there in Dominican Republic.
Steve,
it all is a full circle right there.
I goofed up. I thought Roberto Clemente, but I forgot all about. I didn't know that Marichal was Dominican.
Marichal was called the Dominican Dandy. How do you like that, Steven?
I have a feeling, Ira, if I went down every country, you'd have some sort of story or a theory on where the listeners are coming
and
from.
And Lee, I dare say, if you called me a Brooklyn dandy on the streets of streets of King's Highway, you're in for a bruising over there. You never want to be known as a Brooklyn dandy.
Yesterday, you were on Steve Dumick's show. You brought up the infamous Muriel Berkowitz.
Muriel Goldberg, I think.
Goldberg. I thought it was Berkowitz.
Yeah, Goldberg.
Yeah, originally you told me the story as Muriel Berkowitz.
Well, I forgot the name, so I switched over to Goldberg. Yeah, same thing. and they still talk about that story, Steve.
In the summer, we'll revisit that.
And you know what?
Story.
If that helped Ed Sable get in, so be it. You know, I'm happy for it.
But Peter King liked it, huh?
Peter King liked it.
Not to torture the listeners, and I'll sum it up in 5 seconds. When you were presenting Ed Sable.
Creator of
NFL Films.
Founder.
Your first presentation at the Hall of Fame. You got him in at 95 years old. A huge home run out of the park on a tough assignment there. You explained that, you know what? This was the impact of Ed Sable. Here I am in Brooklyn as a teenager, and I pass up
Saturday night.
It's Saturday night. I pass up on a date with Muriel Goldberg just to watch highlights. That's how powerful it was.
That's absolutely right.
Cracked everybody up and
stunted my social growth, though, Stephen. Even to this day, I'm a little backwards.
You're a sick person, Eric. All right.
When are we going to talk about this big day at training camp? You're holding that out like a tantalizing carrot.
No, there's no tantalizing carrot, Ira. This is very simple. When the training camp schedule comes out, the date will be announced.
Is it going to happen?
It's happening. There will be a training camp takeover day, but you can't announce a date.
Will it be happening, Stephen? You say it will be a day like no other.
It will be a life-changing, franchise-changing, fandom-changing day.
I didn't hear anything outside a tantalizing carrot.
Another.
I got the Kemper going with that one.
He's going.
All right.
Football.
So you can't give us the details. Football.
I can't give you details without a date, Ira. Come on. It's like asking me when the holiday is when it hasn't been announced yet. Or when's opening day? They don't have the schedule.
Well, who's going to be in the Ring of Honor? Yeah, you know, there you go.
Yeah, Ring of Honor. I had a little follow up with you on that. But all right, you know what? We promised last podcast we were going to talk safeties early in this podcast, so we're getting after it now. Interesting, we're live at One Buck Palace in our special little area here that Lee's confident is bugged, and that's okay. Lee's confident every inch of this place is bugged.
I will lay money on it.
I don't know if who's monitoring it, but it may be bugged.
But this is like a Vegas casino in here. They have this place videotaped, everything.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you.
So, at practice today, OTA session Thursday, as when we're recording this afterwards, deep into the night here at One Buck. On the sidelines, J.J. Wilcox, newcomer safety, is wearing a floppy hat. Justin Evans, right? That's the rookie. Wearing a floppy hat. I think it was somebody else wearing a floppy hat as well. Anyway, basically, Keith Tandy and Chris Conte, they're getting a ton of reps. Dirk Cutter was asked about that today, and he's like, well, sort of by default, these guys are playing a lot and building chemistry. I thought it was very interesting toward the broader look toward the starting lineup. Wanted to get your take on the safety situation. Yeah, what's your take there?
I got a nugget that Lee, you know, when we get a nugget, and we get them on a regular basis, you like to share it with your listeners and your readers here at Joe Bucks Fan. So I'm ready to drop a nugget in. May I proceed, Mr. Isbitz?
Of course you can.
A tantalizing carrot.
I have been told that
on good authority
in this competition, maybe a four-way competition at safety, when you add in Wilcox and the newcomer Evans, DeConte and Tandy, I've been told that Tandy basically has a starting job secured. He's going to be very, very difficult to dislodge this fall, depending on what kind of training camp, unless Evans just lights out, Wilcox is better than they even think. So that's three guys fighting for one spot. If that information's correct, I got no reason to doubt it. And guys, let's be honest, Tandy might be one of those late bloomers. It happens. We never thought twice about Keith Tandy his first 2-3 years in Tampa.
You almost had
never talked about it.
No, you almost forgot about him, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, let's be honest. When we talked about Keith Tandy, it was him getting beat deep, right? Well, you know, on a third down play, if he's in there.
You had to check the roster once in a while. He's active?
He played awfully well down the stretch. Awfully well. And didn't have a lot of opportunities over the years. Sometimes all you need is a chance. And Tandy made the most of it. Give him his credit. So, Steve, that's my first line about this whole safety scenario is Keith Tandy, I believe, is sitting in the number one slot. He's in the post position, Lee. It's going to take a lot to dislodge him as a starter.
I would figure you would somehow work on a Belmont Stakes reference.
There you go, my friend.
I was this past spring before the draft, and I was speaking with someone who's a mover and shaker in his organization. It was off the record, private sit-down, and you know I'm trying to find out where the Bucks are going in the draft, what players they have are on their radar, what players they are not on their radar.
You burrowed in like a mollusk,
words
of Isbitz.
Yeah, trying to find out what areas the Bucks might look to upgrade, what areas they may be comfortable with. And safeties came up, and I asked this person point blank. I said, Keith Tandy, first half of the season, dreadful. Got worked over by Tavon Austin, got clowned. Is Sean King, it was a favorite verb of Sean King's,
clowned.
And I said, at second half of the season, after Conte got hurt, guy played like a pro bowler. Which Keith Tandy do you have on the roster? And I was told, we think we have the second half Keith Tandy. So what you're telling me sort of reinforces what I was told some months ago.
I think this is a guy who they now feel, in retrospect, only needed a chance, didn't have a lot of chances early in his career. A guy who's going to blossom early, and right now he's in his prime. And he's full of confidence, and they have confidence in him.
You know I'm going to disagree with you.
And
Ira.
Of course, here comes Steve.
Mr. Contrarian.
Come on, Ira. Keith Tandy, 2013, three interceptions. Where were you? Three picks.
Keep going.
When's the last time a Buck safety had three picks? Come on, man. He was a Shiano man. He was growing into his role. Lovey didn't like him. And he just was relegated.
Which is a badge of honor.
You can fill a notebook with guys that Lovey Smith didn't want.
Oh, boy, three picks. 2013.
In limited action.
Limited action, five starts. And granted, look, the team was going in the toilet in 2013. Yeah, they had that little...
We were not praising the secondary in 2013.
The big issue, the secondary was dreadful in 2012. It got better in 2013. The defense wasn't even that bad in 2013 with Revis. And, they were
even though they
better.
Went 4-12.
Four in the league with takeaways, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, big on takeaways. Yeah. It was Glennon, and the offense was just dreadful. It was, they were like averaging, I believe it was 4.5 points in the second half of games.
So that was the year
stretch.
They started 0-8 or 0-9.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The Glennon.
Freeman debacle.
Yeah, exactly. So Tandy, he kind of disappeared, didn't win a job, And he, like Lee said, he was getting clowned early last season. But
you're saying Lovie Smith doesn't know a good defensive player when he's under his nose?
I would say yes.
Well, I think Lovie proved that, yeah. Ira. Tim Loaf Jennings coming in, starting on week one. The guy didn't even got quit. They got rid of him. This is Lovie's handpicked guy. Mike Jenkins? Come on.
Every time we'd ask about a corner, he'd bring up Mike Jenkins.
No kidding.
Remember that?
Lovie looks at Mark Barron. Okay, looks at Mark Barron and says, "This guy, he can't play
can't
for
fit
me.
Our scheme.
Yeah, get rid of him for a six.
Revis, we can't play our.
Yeah, Revis, we beat to death, and I absolutely agree with you. I gotta say, it's about Mark Barron.
Turns out, he might have been right about Revis. He might have been right.
He
about
wasn't
Revis.
Right.
No,
about
he wasn't. Right.
Come on, Revis guy wins the Super Bowl.
Went to the
next
Pro Bowl.
Year.
Yeah,
where is he now, my friend? Where
now,
is he now?
This is, we're 3 years later. Right,
3 years.
Now, I got introduce this about Mark Barron. After he goes to the Rams, they're lucky. What they get, like a fourth round pick or something like that.
Fourth and a sixth.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know, because I spoke to the guy, before he was traded, Dominic had told me when he drafted Barron, they looked at him as like a hybrid slash linebacker.
But there was no hybrids back then. There was a kind of a new position with Honey Bear and Matthew, yeah.
And that's what Dominic had envisioned for
Honey
the guy.
Badger, Honey Badger.
Yeah,
Honey Badger.
And that's what, Honey Bear. But that's what Dominic had envisioned for the guy. Well, and obviously he could play the run very well. Pass, he couldn't play that well. You know, he goes to the Rams. To use that verb, clowned. He got clowned terribly by Odell Beckham as a safety. But the following year, can't remember who it was that got hurt. So they put Barron at outside linebacker, and the guy blew up. Just completely blew up. Anyway, that season, the Bucs played the Rams. And Jeff Fish, as you well know, four days prior to the game on Wednesdays, they always have the opposing coach do a teleconference with local media. I specifically asked Jeff Fisher about Mark Barron and moving him to linebacker. And Fisher said when they scouted him as a college prospect, that's what they had envisioned for him, which is what Dominic had told me before he was drafted. I saw Dominic at an NFL function. He was working for ESPN at the time. He had told me that. So it wasn't like Dominic said it after the fact. Anyway, Fisher said they saw that in Barron, and when they got Barron there, that's why they moved him to linebacker, because they saw that in him. Now, how is it Jeff Fisher could see that from a guy who wasn't even on his roster? Lovie Smith had the guy on, saw him every flipping day in practice. He couldn't figure this out.
Lee, when you asked Fisher that question on a teleconference call, was that before or after Isbitz asked him, "How do you still have a job, Mr. Fisher? You have a horrible record in this league." Now, Steve, to Lee's point, that is called building your scheme and your defense around your personnel. That's what it's called.
Yes, yes.
And Lovie was not good at that.
He was unwilling.
He was not good at it. And good coaches do that, Steve. They do that.
Yeah, they do. And just to be fair, I mean, Tandy was bad early last year, but he turned it around. He's also got an interesting nugget in his past, is that he was mentored here, and they still have a relationship that I know of, by Rondé Barber. His first year as a safety was Rondé's first as a safety.
Not a bad guy to follow around.
And Tandy will talk to you if you talk to him about the work ethic that he learned, the note-taking and some of the stuff. He relayed a story that Rondé was texting him after some of these picks he got last year. You know, hey, another one, and I'm watching you, and that kind of stuff.
Taught him how to break down film. That's big, Steve.
Absolutely.
How to watch film.
I'm not saying Keith Tandy's an all-pro or he's going to keep up his streak and get 12 picks this year, but he played like a great starter for a large chunk of the second half of the season. I don't think you just give up on the guy and say, well, you know, give him that job until he loses it.
So naturally, Lee, it's very natural to think that the way the guy closed the season is closer to the real player than the guy that started the season.
Yeah, and that's when I spoke earlier about someone, a mover and shaker here.
And maybe Mike Smith helped him in his own way, too.
Well, I'm sure, but there's something that, and I got to give Steve the credit. Steve dug this up.
Don't give him any credit, Lee.
Steve dug this up, and he told me about it some months ago. We're sitting on it. If we can ever get someone on the record, it's going to be one hell of a story.
I don't know you to sit on any story, DeKemper.
Well, to me, off the record is sacrosanct. But we're sitting on something. It's a bombshell. But if we get someone on the record.
See how he teases the listeners?
Teasing. Too much teasing.
If we can get someone on the record to talk about this, it will explain in great detail why Keith Tandy and Chris Conte stunk the first half of the season and why, with a snap of the finger, their play changed.
All right, we will get Joel Glazer to call you this afternoon, and he'll break it down.
You know what? Joel might not know. It's that kind of story.
That's correct.
Going back to the safety role as it ties to the current Bucs, Dominic was, you know, barking to left and right when he drafted Barron is that this was the guy to cover Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, my goodness.
This was the guy to cover Jimmy Graham. This was the guy to cover Greg Olsen. There was a dedicated tight end coverage guy.
You know, you're right. They did say that.
And that was the song and dance.
Didn't they watch this guy more closely at Alabama? He was a very effective player, but he wasn't. They used him the way they should use him.
It didn't pan out. But, Ira, the question, I guess, for you right now is, with all these extra reps that Conte and
Tandy
are getting as the lead safeties and OTAs, granted it's just OTAs, but there's a lot of communication going on, a lot of practice, a lot of chemistry. How big of a leg up does that give in Conte to get this starting gig?
I wouldn't read too much into it, Steve. Not too much into it. The underwear football, now DeKemper's calling it topless football. He'll do anything to get a couple of hits on the website.
The Steve. Topless football is when they take the helmets off. Topless.
I understand. I wouldn't read too much into it, Steve. Look, you know, the whole month of August in the heat, and the indoor facility will not be ready till the season starts, so they're not going in there. The whole month of August, plenty of time for Mr. Wilcox, Mr. Evans, you know, to make their move. Look, they're not going to, close the door on a second-round draft pick, Lee. They want Evans to win that job, all things being equal.
Of course. Second-round pick, you want him to get on the field, certainly. Wilcox is a veteran, so his learning curve should be limited.
You know, look, Steve, I know Conte made some big plays. One of the biggest plays
of
the year.
I'm not backing Chris Conte. Don't hang that on me.
So, you know, but he's gotten burned a lot, too, as a Buccaneer.
Well, I don't think anybody will confuse him with Larry Wilson.
You know, and there's a reason they drafted Evans. In the second
of course.
Round.
Yeah, it's a big investment. It's just that it's interesting. That's where we sit with safety. But you talked about underwear football, Ira. Let me make the point that just because Lee refers to it as topless football or underwear football, that's not like that's in the headline with a lady with no
it's not lingerie
on.
League.
That's because you won't let him do it.
That's not drawing hits, as you call it, to the website. It's just a one-liner in a story. Come on, Ira.
Yeah, it's not the lingerie league.
We're not running that kind of outfit. and of course, your podcast is presented. This classy podcast from our classy website is presented by Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. You definitely want to visit edmorescadillactampa.com, edmorescadillacbrandon.com for all the June offers. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher, and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon, Brandon's only luxury dealership. Period.
And you know what, Lee? I'm gonna interject here with a bromide. Throw that in there.
I love that word. I can just picture a mule.
I think it's worth noting for our listeners that the other day, a day after the Buck announcement about the Ring of Honor, and a day after Messrs. DeKemper and Isbitz had their faces right up John Gruden's butt, as this is a no-brainer choice. Gruden did this, Gruden did that.
No-brainer.
The following day, I come up with my column and say, where is Father Dungy? They got him waiting in the lobby. That was my Godfather 2 reference. I don't know how many people got it.
I love the Godfather, and that blew past me.
Yeah, yeah.
Waiting in the lobby.
That was Frankie Patangeli. They got me waiting in the
lobby.
Patangeli. He's the guy who slid his wrists in the bathtub. Yeah. I'm not trying to compare Dungy to a guy who's committing suicide. But I wrote that column and took a pot shot, early in the column about what you guys were writing. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting slapped around, don't do that, Kaufman. We need unanimity on this site. I think it's worth mentioning. And I do appreciate it, having that kind of freedom, to take on the powers that be that run this site. I didn't call you boys a bunch of scoundrels, but I offered an alternative voice.
Scoundrels.
And I have another nugget. That's two nuggets within the first 15 minutes of this podcast, Steve. Are our listeners going to expect that every podcast now?
Hey, you're the nugget dropper. And Ira, write whatever you want. Nobody cares.
Thank you.
I hear a world.
Nobody reads or nobody cares?
No, people care. I'm at JoeBucksFan.com world headquarters. Anything goes. You got your own locker. You do whatever you want.
Thank you, my friend.
The floor is yours.
So as long as I didn't get suspended.
Nugget number one is Keith Tandy starting. He's got the job opening
nugget,
day.
Nugget number two. If I was a betting man, and I'm not, but if I was, Lee, I would bet that the 2018 recipient of the Ring of Honor, and maybe there's two of them, but at least one of them will be Tony Dungy.
I believe that. By the way, did you see someone, I don't know how often you read the comments in your column. I know you do occasionally. But someone wondered, you come across so anti-Gruden, someone wondered if he offered you raisins one day.
I'm not anti-Gruden, and I thought I made that point in the column.
Didn't he just call you back?
Yes, he did.
You didn't pick up the phone. Gruden calls you back.
I called him to congratulate him, and he called me back. and I didn't pick up
the phone.
Can
you play the voicemail on the podcast?
I think I might have been in a store getting Raisinets or something over there, Lee. But I'm not anti-Gruden. I mean, how could you be? You know, let's go back to 2002 for a second, Steve. We won't dwell on it, but think of the pressure that John Gruden was under
when he
came here. You know, a tremendous amount of pressure. He knew the price that they paid for him, an inordinate price. I think an unprecedented price at the time to pry a coach out of his contract. And he goes in there, and he made some really sharp personnel moves. I'm not giving Bruce Allen the credit for Michael Pittman and Keenan McCardle. I'm not giving that to Bruce Allen.
McKay.
That was Gruden.
McKay.
No, well, that's right. I'm not giving it to McKay either.
Really?
You're right. Allen wasn't here yet. So I'm not giving it to McKay.
I give McKay some credit because, you know, I understand where you're going, but, you know, it had been McKay that had to go out and negotiate the contract and outbid other teams. So,
But Gruden had a lot of clout at that point. There's no question he had a lot of clout. And, you know, he didn't touch the defense, Steve. Smart man. Didn't touch it. Didn't mess with Monty. Smart man. Just like when Dungy went to Indy. He didn't mess with the offense. Don't mess with Peyton Manning.
There was at one point in that season, I heard Monty Kiffin talk about this. He went to Gruden. He said, there's a blitz I want to use. Tony didn't want me to do it. Tony almost ordered me not to do it. I'd like to do it. Can I? And Gruden told him, if you think it'll work, go for it. And obviously they had one of the best defenses, certainly in the franchise history, with the possible exception of 99.
Steve, the irony of that whole situation is by the end of Gruden's tenure, Tampa, after the 08 season, the Gruden-Monty relationship had frayed, mostly because the Bucs went into the tank in December after 9-3. And you guys remember going, you know, we went into Charlotte. I was there.
Oh,
and they ran
night.
All over the Bucs.
Monday night. Sure.
And the irony is the Buc offense was pretty darn good in December. They scored a lot of points if you go back.
But defense
could
stop
anybody.
There was
one game against Atlanta that they didn't score. But three out of the four games they scored enough to win. And, of course, that was when Monty announced that he was leaving. You know, and Gruden couldn't stand the timing of it. He implored Kiffin to wait till after the season to announce that he was going with his son to Southern Cal. And I think Lane Kiffin put a lot of pressure on Monty. We need the announcement because of recruiting.
Sure.
Can I interject? That's one of my favorite words. I'm going to gloss Joe Buck's fan because our first scoop in Joe Buck's fan history, that was our first year. I got a phone call from a guy who I trust, played football at Clemson. He has, in your words, tentacles up in Clemson, heavy hitter, movers, and shakers. Well, this guy got a phone call. Said, hey, you know, Booster Club's looking for more money. We might get Lane Kiffin. He's like, we might get Lane. We're interviewing him this week. And this guy said he heard Lane Kiffin, this person that, okay, my source, his best friend, who also played at Clemson football, was in on the meeting with Lane Kiffin. You know, they had a board. And this board was interviewing Kiffin. And Kiffin had told this board, if you hire me, Monty, my dad, comes with me to run the defense. We ran that story on Joe Buck's fan. That was one of the few unsourced stories we ever ran. And it turned out to be true. And I think that forced Monty's hand. The word was out that his son was going around telling, you hire me, it's a package deal, my dad comes with me. So I think that article helped force Monty's hand.
Those suitors might have been more interested in Monty Kiffin than they were in Lane Kiffin.
Who knows? Interesting history. All right, Ira, I'm going to rope you back into 2017. Dirk Koetter, after practice today, he's asked about contributors. You know, who's shining? I hit Koetter with, hey, media wasn't allowed in here for the last 2 days. Who was shining in the last 2 days? Koetter goes to Adam Humphries and Chris Godwin. Really heaps a lot of praise on Godwin. And ironically, Humphries as well, because Godwin might be stealing Humphries' job. Very interesting competition there. Very interesting, I think, from the standpoint that the better Godwin is, the more it might make Koetter decide, well, we need to run more four wide and change the offense. If this guy's that good, we got to get him on the field. I want to get your take on that, but I want to also throw it at you like this. You remember when Mike Williams showed up here in the fourth round? Probably practiced in OTAs, I don't know, a handful of practices in OTAs, and all of a sudden they named him the number one receiver on this team, and he was excellent in his rookie year. Could Godwin get into a situation where he all of a sudden impresses so much that he's the guy, and it's not number one, but that he's a definite number three, and maybe they spread this offense open?
Steve, what you're saying squares with everything I've been hearing from people other than Dirk Koetter and several people. Godwin has been the standout from what I'm hearing. He has been number 12, third-round pick. People were wondering, well, why are they spending a third-round pick on a wide receiver? Well, they thought he was better than any other prospect that was still available on the board. I applaud that. Take the best player. Did they have a huge need at wide receiver after getting DeSean Jackson?
Maybe.
Maybe. Know. They had a massive need. Get out of here, Calvin.
You're talking about the number four receiver is not massive.
No. They lost Vincent Jackson. They replaced him with DeSean Jackson. They still needed depth. They needed a receiver. If they didn't draft Godwin there, Lee and I would have hit the ceiling. It would have been heard across
the Bay Area. You went too crazy about this wide receiver vacuum over there. Adam Humphries caught 55 balls as a third guy last year. Not too bad.
And he was so valuable, the Bucks went out and spent how many millions of dollars?
And anyway, what I'm saying is,
go look at how many receptions he caught in December when at crunch time, Humphries.
Now, wait
single
a minute.
Digits.
Wait a minute. Didn't he end the year with a 10-catch game?
That was
game?
January.
Last game.
The that last was game. January.
Oh, the Kemper. Of all the things this bit said, that's number one on the clown list.
They were out of
did you hear that?
They were out of
the playoffs. He's trying to say he didn't finish well, and I just said he caught 10 balls in the last game of the season.
Well, that was January.
Oh, did I catch you with
no,
your
he
hand?
Said it was January.
Season was over. Season was over.
You're talking December.
I'll let the listeners hear this. Wait till Javier hears this one. Oh, man. Stick carries unite, man. You got to back me up
was
on
that
this.
A meaningless
boy, did I catch him.
To what Steve said, for a better part of a year and a half, Steve and I, rarely a day went by where we didn't bang the drum, get a receiver.
I agree.
And you know what?
Anyway.
DeSean Jackson and Evans goes down without Godwin. They're right back in the crap
back
hole.
Back to my point, Lee. Godwin has been the standout. I'm not arguing that. And we got nothing to fight here except your ridiculous pronouncement on Adam Humphries the way he closed the season. I'm hearing from everybody. Godwin is catching everything in sight. And don't forget his reputationally, very good at making catches in traffic.
Yes, go back and look at that Rose Bowl last year.
I don't think he's a burner. Some people think he's faster than he looks. I don't think he's ever going to be seen as a burner.
What was that speed he got clocked in combat?
You know,
it's not slow.
And Steve, you make an interesting point. If he continues to shine through training camp, that's going to cause Cutter to tweak. You know, I've been talking a lot about double tight ends, and all of a sudden, you know, you got these three wideouts. It could, and that's all good. It's not a problem. It's a good problem to have.
It's exciting. I'll say this about Godwin. I'm almost scared to write about Chris Godwin. I've written a couple articles already since Underwear Football has kicked off, so to speak. I'm almost scared to write about Chris Godwin.
I like that attitude, Lee. I think that's smart.
Well, 3 or 4 years ago, Tommy Streeter lit up Underwear
Here's
Football.
The difference, Lee, because you've said it before. Here's the difference. Those guys weren't draft picks. They weren't top picks.
Okay.
Streeter,
Godwin
Owusu.
Was, yeah.
This guy's
Godwin,
a day two pick.
Godwin's, if he went in the second round, I don't think anybody in the league would have been surprised. So he's a guy who's supposed to
mm-hmm.
be
okay.
shiny.
Okay.
I think that's the nuance. But still, it's still Underwear Football. Mm-hmm. And
so Lee's making a solid point.
You know, no one's pressing him at the line of scrimmage.
Now, speaking of Underwear Football, has O.J. Howard ever, has he done anything that's really jumped out at you?
Godwin's looked better than Ben Howard. Yeah. Again, don't read too much into it, but those are the facts.
Now, there was a video out this week of one of the Bucks OTAs that was not available for media where Howard made a hell of a one-handed catch from James. Granted, Underwear Football, but still, making a one-handed catch the way he did, that was impressive.
Did somebody say a week after the draft that, in explaining how Howard fell to 19, that he's got suspect hands. Didn't somebody say that?
Yeah, Rick Neuheisel said that on the radio. I wrote it up on JoeBucksFan.com that's an issue with him. He doesn't catch the ball cleanly. He makes the catch, and maybe we're splitting hairs. This is Neuheisel talking, but he was saying that in the NFL, that unclean catch
you can get jarred out of a catch.
Not even that. Yeah. He was saying it's going to affect your yak and your big play when you're not crisp and clean.
Okay.
I've seen a little bit of that from Howard through the OTAs, but we're splitting hairs. I asked Cutter today, I said, you know, they're throwing balls behind Howard a lot. And I said to him something like, you know, maybe I'm wrong, because I was waiting for him to just be like, what the hell are you talking about? But thankfully, Cutter agreed with me. And I asked him if...
Hey, you finally found somebody to agree with.
There you go, Ira. I asked him are quarterbacks misjudging his speed? You know, as a big guy coming across, he's supposed to have this lightning speed. Cutter said, no, it's just bad throws, that they're just, you know.
Hey, speaking of tight ends, guys, I think it's worth spending 2 minutes on. Austin Seferian Jenkins, a name that's very familiar to Buck fans. They kind of look at him with disdain, and I don't blame him. During his 2-year stint, he was did nothing to distinguish himself. And I still remember Roy Cummings and I leaving the hotel in New Orleans one day.
Taxi?
You know, and yeah, the team bus, you know, two, three buses have already left. All the buses are gone. And Roy and I jump in a cab, and I look, and I see, you know, there's Seferian Jenkins on, you know, he's just coming out of lobby. I say, Roy, he missed the bus. Oh, no, you're crazy. Sure enough, he missed it. But anyway, I guess one of the New York papers had a big interview with him, and he admitted, you know, an alcohol problem, a serious one, but that he has gone through rehab. I believe he's said he's been sober for 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. So two things. One, good for ASJ. I think we're all rooting for him.
Sure.
Not a bad guy,
you know,
Steve. But as I tweeted, and I'm going to stand by it, he stole money from this organization for 2 years. I know that sounds a little harsh, but that's the way I look at it.
I saw that tweet, and I don't know if it was harsh. I'd certainly use that in relation to Lovie Smith. That guy did swindle money. I'll say that right now.
How do all roads lead back to Lovie Smith, Steve? You know,
he's a burr under my sock.
Well, what I meant was that Seferian Jenkins never lived up to his talent because he had too many things going on.
Steve and I came across something with, I don't know if we could ever run with it, but he's got big his issue aside with alcohol, and it's great that he's overcoming this. I don't mean to trivialize it in any way, shape, or form. It's great that he recognizes it. Great that he's coming out of it. Great as just for a human being that he's, you know, trying to better his life. But he's got a head issue, and it's nothing to do with the 12-ounce bottle. He's got a head issue.
He's just very immature, and we can hit that maybe at another podcast.
That's a fair word, immature.
I was actually talking with some folks today at One Buck about that. It was an ESPN piece. He talked to ESPN. Because, hey, you know, he's gone now, so the right people who know ASJ and all the background, they can open up a little bit. So maybe we'll get into that in another podcast.
Okay.
A little bit interesting. I'll say this about ASJ. In that story, it didn't really reveal that he had a major alcohol problem. He just, like, wanted to quit drinking, and he thought it was not good for him, but it wasn't like he was explaining that, I was drinking so much, I did this.
And he said he had issues that drove him to drink, and he never said what the issues were, Steve.
Whatever it was, it wasn't.
Well, there we go. I said he had a head issue.
He didn't diagram some sort of, like, all these great stories of things he was doing, drinking. And he didn't, never struck me or really anybody I talked to here at One Buck that he was a guy getting up in the morning and throwing back a few shots and going to work. It wasn't anything like that. But whatever it is, it's a contract year for him. He's doing all the right things, saying all the right things, and he's reconnected now with Josh McCown, a quarterback who at least kind of likes him. And
good,
probably
good luck with the Jet quarterback situation.
He's going to get a lot of balls thrown his way and a great chance.
Yeah, most of them are going to be behind him.
Speaking along the lines of alcohol, I'm going to throw this at you. I don't know if you read the story, but I want your feedback.
I thought Lee was going to ask you for a beer.
Yeah, this really caught my eye. Prickly Pete Prisco had a – and I saw him when he had a one-on-one with Noah Spence last week.
Yes.
When Prickly Pete was here. And he did a really great feature story on Noah Spence, Prickly Pete that is, on CBSSports.com. And in that story, Spence said that he's so driven to be the best he could be. And everybody's making a big deal about his new body. You know, he's slimmed down, but he's put on, you know, he basically weighs the same, but he sculpted his body. But in that piece, he said, I don't even drink anymore because I don't want anything to stand in my way of being great. I'm like, whoa. The inference there is that maybe he had a drinking issue. I don't think – I've never heard that. But I want your reaction as the guy evidently so motivated. Like, you know what? It seemed to me, if you read between the lines, I got the rest of my life to have beers.
You know what? The first thing I thought of, Steve, when I hear something like that is that could explain maybe why he slipped a little bit in the draft. Maybe he went a little later than people thought. You know, these guys, they do their research, Steve.
They do.
If he's got a drink now,
I do not know if he had a problem or he just said he quit drinking.
It was an interesting line in there, and Lee's on point.
That's not a line you just drop in the middle of a story.
Well,
though, you know,
I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know how to read into it.
We can't sit here and say that he had
a
drinking.
You've overcome your drinking issues. I
thank you. I have. It doesn't mean that he had a drinking problem, but it doesn't mean that, you know, hey, every Saturday night maybe he got clocked like a lot of the guys on the team.
Now, Steve, can you relay the story you heard? I don't even think the story. I think
it's
out there.
No, I was gonna close with that. I'll say this, and it's pure speculation, but it's damn interesting. And Lee and I talked about this when it happened. Talked about it even with Steve Dumig on WDAE. Austin Seferian Jenkins' last game with the Buccaneers was his first game of the year. Right, he caught the big touchdown in Atlanta, and ASJ was invited as the star of the game on the Buccaneers Radio Network for an hour with TJ Reeves.
You mean later that week?
Yeah, during the middle of the week.
Yeah, on 620. Yeah. They always have
Coaches weekly
Buccaneers
show.
Insider, whatever they call it.
Buccaneers Radio Network.
Total access.
Yeah, total access.
And he gets on there, and TJ is just chatting with him, chatting it up. ASJ sounded great, was fantastic on the radio, a lot of personality. And TJ asks him, hey, ASJ, so what'd you do when we got home from Atlanta? What'd you do that night? Did you watch the Panthers and the Broncos or whatever it was? And ASJ says, yeah, definitely caught some of the game, went back to my house, you know, just relaxing, enjoying ourselves, watching a little football. Sure. TJ says, who was there with you? Were you by yourself? Who were you there with? Doug Martin and Noah Spence. And when I heard that, I was like,
Alarm bells went off
because I already knew that the veterans on this team, and Jameis included, had already distanced themselves from ASJ socially because he was just not the guy they wanted to hang out with for whatever reason. And when I heard Martin and Spence, I said to Lee, keep your eye on Martin and Spence.
Because, right then and there you said that?
Yes, because if you're hanging out with ASJ after a game, that's your choice to hang out at his place. That might not be the best
thing. I remember
Steve
called me up. He goes, think about this. He goes, Noah Spence, who had a history of X in college, that's why he got booted from Ohio State. Doug Martin, we had heard the rumors that ASJ we knew was a head case. And Steve called me up, and he's like, this is what I just heard on radio. I'm like, whoa. And now look at Spence says he quit drinking.
That was
Martin, we know
now,
what.
Now Isbit's got me thinking about who I watch Monday Night Football with.
Yeah, let's think about this. Noah Spence is quoted, and like I said, we're not inferring right. anything here.
But he brought it up.
He brought it up because he wants to be great. So he's no more. You know, he could have three bottles of beer a week. Who knows?
Or Riesling.
But he said, I'm not drinking anymore. Martin, we all know, well documented. And ASJ said, had to go through a drinking issue. Interesting. Just,
Dave, you jumped on that right away. That's impressive.
I don't know how impressive it is, but it's interesting for the Noah, in light of the Noah Spence comment and ASJ and whatever. Okay, last point, and we're going to make it quick, Ira. Here's the deal. Today, practice, OTAs, there was one notable thing that did not happen. We did not watch Mr. Aguayo and Mr. Folk line up for kicks. Now, that's no coincidence. That's no accident. There's always a special teams kicking period. And it seems to me like Mr. Cutter and Mr. Light said, you know what, media, we're not going to give you we're not going to throw the chum in the water today. No kicking. What do you make of that as a sage man who's been to 700,000 football practices?
It's obvious, that these guys are kicking away from our prying eyes, Lee. It's not a coincidence. Steve's right. It's funny. I had a conversation with DeMar Dotson today. Mm-hmm. Getting his thoughts about the 2017 Bucks. He talked about the competition is going to be brutal in training camp, and he went right to the kickers. And he goes, "We're all into it. Every time those guys start kicking, we're all into it." Well, guess what, DeMar? So are we. From a media perspective, you're right. That stuck out like a sore thumb today.
I think that's a column right there, Ira. That's a column. We're all into it. That's the headline.
I got total freedom. It's been.
I could suggest.
Here's one, and just me being the curious. There's a conspiracy under every other rug theory. The last time I can remember a open media at practice where there was no kicking, they actually had to kick. It was Aguayo last year. They had him. It was with the Browns. They had him and the Browns kicker go to the stadium instead of kicking in front of the fans. And that was after Aguayo got booed. Remember he got booed at training camp?
You're right. They moved him to Ray J.
Yeah. I wonder if they're that paranoid. That they said, there's only so many practices you can have. You have to practice. Go to the stadium. For underwear football?
It's hard to
be that paranoid.
I don't know if they would do it in underwear football. I mean, it makes a little sense in training camp. Get used to the field. You're closer to the real season kicking on the field. But interesting stuff. Anyway, all right, Ira.
So we'll be back.
We'll be back Thursday. Thursday for the next podcast.
Real quick, just so people don't get the wrong idea. We're all big Noah Spence fans. I'm not insinuating or hinting, neither is Steve, neither are you, Ira.
You're just quoting what he said.
We're just quoting what
nobody's
he said.
Nobody's got the wrong
idea. People's like, Joe Buck's fans said, we're not insinuating anything.
They'll say it anyway.
We're all big fans of Noah,
They'll say it anyway. I'm not the biggest fan of Noah Spence, but I not on a personal level. I just don't think the hype is necessarily real, but that's a story for another day. Anyway, Ira, we encourage everyone leave a comment on your podcast, iTunes. Leave that comment. No excuses, people.
It's a growing podcast, Steve.
Ira's growing
Jump
podcast.
Aboard.
especially you folks in Guam, the two of you out there, please, you know, type away. Whatever language it is, doesn't matter. And
now let's go Costa Rica. Let's go.
All right, Ira.
Let's go make a move.
Ira, get out of here.